Welcome back to the Bitcoin Layer. I'm Nick Bhatia. Today, we welcome back our friend Caitlin Long of Custodia Bank. Caitlin, welcome back.
Thanks, Nick. It's always great to be with you. We got a lot to talk about.
Yeah. We do, as always. Caitlin, let's just start with how are you? What's going on with your bank? And I know that we've both read Nick Carter's expose on Silvergate, on the Biden administration, and Operation Chokepoint 2.0.
Thankfully, Washington, D.C. is a sieve, and I've been approached by more insiders. It's really fun when the insiders come and fill in big puzzle pieces. And it's very clear that Michael Barr at the Fed instigated Operation Chokepoint 2.0. Folks have been able to zero in that he instigated it the week after FTX failed. And it's very interesting because we knew that from discovery in our lawsuit. I'm pointing only to publicly available documents here, that that he had a meeting about Custodia right before Thanksgiving 2023. And very shortly thereafter, I believe it was a Sunday, the draft denial memo appeared. And I always wondered in the back of my mind, why were they working on the Sunday of a holiday weekend? We had had our application outstanding at that point for more than 2 years. And I got the answer to that puzzle. Basically, the Fed was moving. They were hyper focused on killing all the crypto banks. That's the gist. That's what I've been able to confirm. There were some pretty crazy things that I'm not ready yet to share that happened. But let me just step back and zoom out and confirm that this Warren crowd of Warren-controlled federal financial regulators in the United States has not adhered to the rule of law, has been ends justify the means of trying to kill private sector crypto companies by imposing arbitrary and capricious rules on them and doing it behind closed doors, hiding in a fashion where it didn't come out in the Silvergate situation until very recently, till 2 weeks ago, which is a year and a half after the failure, that Silvergate actually did survive the bank run. That was news to me. I thought they actually didn't survive the bank run, but they did. And it was the Fed ultimatum to either quickly diversify or throw in the towel that caused them to decide to throw in the towel. And that triggered the bank run. So the big impact, Nick, is that Michael Barr at the Fed, his legacy is not only that he backed off the big capital increase in Basel III Endgame for the big banks, and that he handed Bank of New York Mellon supervisory non-objection to enter the crypto custody regime ahead of all the other banks like Custodia that have been waiting for years, but also that he triggered the 2023 spring banking crisis. That is his legacy. And the more information that comes out about what he did, the clearer that becomes. And I can't wait for some of these things to become public. If the Republicans take the Senate, and especially if Trump takes the White House, not only will there be investigations, that's going to happen if the Republicans take the Senate, I believe, but any criminal referrals might actually have some teeth. And so this is going to be very interesting. It is just stunning, the lawlessness. And it's not just at the SEC. I haven't even mentioned the SEC. I think a lot of folks who are who've watched all this on Twitter think that this is the SEC. No, it's not. It's the federal bank regulators. And again, hats off to Nick, because his story in February 2023, that with the pictures of the people who instigated all this, was incredibly accurate given how little information was known at the time. And given how disparate all this coordination was, there's some more stuff. Again, I think, Nick, I've only probably shared about half of what I know. If you knew everything, you'd be appalled. You would crave a return to the rule of law. You would recognize how unbelievably fragile the financial system is. And taking a small bank down that happened to serve the crypto industry triggered this entire bank run that cost the FDIC $40 billion and took almost a third Actually, a little more than a third, because the deposit insurance fund was only $110 billion at the time. Every single bank has had to increase its deposit insurance fees. And so every single American has been impacted by this. What if they had not given that ultimatum to Silvergate? And what if Silvergate had not shut down and the Silicon Valley Bank run started the next day?
The Bitcoin Layer is sponsored by Unchained, the undisputed leader in Bitcoin financial services. Unchained empowers you to take full control of your Bitcoin with collaborative multi-sig vaults in which you own two of three keys and you gain a Bitcoin security partner. You can purchase Bitcoin directly into your cold storage via Unchained's trading desk and eliminate all exchange risks. Unchained also offers the best IRA in the industry, where you can convert your existing 401ks or retirement accounts to Unchained, all while keeping control of your Bitcoin private keys. Don't pay more in taxes than you have to. Talk to Unchained today. Go to unchained.com/TBL for $100 off when you sign up. Don't risk your Bitcoin security. Do you have Bitcoin private keys stored on paper? Make sure you convert those keys to titanium with Stampseed. Stampseed has this really cool DIY kit that allows you to hammer in your seed phrase into these small titanium plates that are fire resistant and damage resistant. This kit is designed by titanium metal workers that have been working in stamping metal for over 14 years, and your words are deeply stamped, not just a shallow dot. So make sure you check out stampseed.com today and use code TBL for 15% off of your order. Unbelievable, Caitlin. We have so much to unpack here. I want to start with asking you about the SEC, the Federal Reserve, and the U.S. Treasury Department, and the White House.
Yes.
We have different players. Obviously, they are linked. So let's get into pointing the fingers. We already are calling out Michael Barr here for his direct involvement.
Yep.
You mentioned the SEC, but bring it all together so that the uninitiated knows exactly who is responsible for this. And like you said, hats off to Nick Carter.
Yeah.
Nick Carter and Caitlin Long, who's with us today, are two of the people here on the front lines when it comes to banks fighting the Bitcoin industry. Caitlin is doing it because she's a founder of a Bitcoin-centric bank.
Yep.
And Nick is doing it because he's incredibly passionate about the industry and basically has been there from the beginning and is fighting the good fight. I mean, when we really think about what Nick is doing in his observation and his research, of course he has portfolio companies.
Yeah.
But there's an aspect of passion there that's involved. So I'll hand it back to you with the government agency question.
Yeah, Nick, I actually think that both Nick Carter and I are just we are deeply committed to right and wrong and to justice. That all of this just hits us in the gut that something very wrong happened here, and that people who were ends justify the means chucked out the concept of due process and rule of law. And we are seeing this, Nick, all over the U.S. government. Look at what the FAA is doing to Elon Musk over Starlink, for example. Just out of bounds, regulatory agencies behaving outside of their guardrails. And man, oh man, have we seen that with Operation Choke Point. So let's step back. It was the White House who coordinated. We know who it was. And one of the insiders who came forward to me right after it happened told me the guy's name, Bharat Ramamurthy. He was the Deputy National Economic Council Director. And when I looked him up, because I'd never met the guy and had no idea how we ended up on his radar screen, well, it's now crystal clear that whole crew of Warrenites suffers from crypto derangement syndrome. I just found out very recently that a senior Fed staffer said in a meeting that all crypto users are criminals. Okay, if that's what he still thinks, no wonder why the banking system is so backwards, because there's incredible technophobia. I highly recommend By the way, Austin Campbell's recent podcast, he did a short one with Laura Shin on Unchained, and also a longer form one on Bankless. He's a Democrat, and he's really appalled at this Warren crowd's lawlessness. But anyway, back to your question. This all came from the White House. This was Elizabeth Warren's crew. When I keep pointing to her, I've been told by multiple insiders it's an open secret, not even a secret anymore, that she had a deal with Biden. And when she endorsed him to drop out of the 2020 presidential campaign, she got control over financial services and economic policy in the Biden White House, including all personnel. Okay, so anyone who is in a financial services or economic job in the Biden administration owes their allegiance to her because she cleared them all or nominated them all. Huge separation of powers problems. Again, I think history is not going to be kind to this Biden White House because they just ignored the rule of law in so many ways. And I'm not saying this to be partisan. I'm saying this because it's a fact. And what's interesting about the crypto space, and this is part of the reason I bring up Austin Campbell as a committed Democrat, we've got a lot of committed Democrats, a lot of committed progressives among us, right? We just saw Dan Moorhead from Pantera come out and talk about why Bitcoin is a progressive's dream. And I'm thinking of, you know, Jason Gottlieb, Amanda Wick, Sheila Warren. These are committed Democrats, and they are all appalled at what this Warren crew has done. And they all are trying to get this Warren crew out. And I am told that Kamala, if she does win the presidency, that she's going to clean house. And I'm not making any political endorsements here. It's hard to conclude that without her actually saying that. There's a lot of back channel stuff, so who knows if it's true. In talking to political campaign people, there are people like Bharat Ramamurthy who are out there. He went on CNBC a couple of weeks ago and claimed to speak for her. And when I tweeted about that, multiple people came to me and said, he's not speaking for her. So I don't know what to believe here. Again, I don't think she's really stepped in and taken control of her policy team yet. So we don't know yet if this back channel murmuring that all these financial services regulators who are Warrenites, she's aware that they're all Warrenites. And if she wants to change, she's going to have to clean house. So we'll see. It's clear Trump would, but I also have said publicly, I caution a little bit that he's talked about how he wants Jamie Dimon as Treasury Secretary. That appointment, whoever is his Treasury Secretary, is probably his most important one, because the Treasury controls the OCC, which is the national bank regulator, controls FinCEN, controls, you know, whether the U.S. issues a stable coin, a CBDC, right? All of that comes out of that Treasury position. And obviously, in his first administration, he had a very anti-crypto Treasury Secretary Mnuchin. And if Jamie Dimon is his Treasury Secretary, is it really going to be that much better? I think there's just so much uncertainty. But one thing is clear, that this election is, as I've said before, going to be batshit crazy. And it has been. And, you know, the regulatory sticks are going to fall in the next couple of months after the election. We'll get some clarity, I think.
Absolutely. So we're only a few weeks out from the election. Now, Caitlin is making arguments on both sides, saying that Trump and a Trump administration might be anti-Bitcoin if the wrong Treasury Secretary is put in, for example, Jamie Dimon. Caitlin, would you mind taking a 4 to 8 year break from Custodia to be our Treasury Secretary? I'll let you answer that on your own time. But then with Harris coming in, and you hear rumors that she might clean house, but yeah, we are not able to confirm that. So what Caitlin is saying here is that going forward, your decision at the polls, it shouldn't necessarily and explicitly be driven by what happened in the Biden administration. However, we have Elizabeth Warren, senator from Massachusetts, Democratic Party, the Biden administration, Bharat Ramamurthy in the Biden administration, all with extreme anti-crypto, anti-Bitcoin stances. And yes, let me make this point here, because you bring up progressives and how Bitcoin is a progressive cause. Not only do I agree with that, but it is so clear that it's establishment banking that runs the Warrenites, not progressives. It's the banking lobby. So we've heard, I heard from somebody who would be knowledgeable, and she told me that Warren was directly being advised by the Ripple contingent 4 to 5 years ago. And so
remember, Michael Barr was on the board of Ripple.
I didn't know that.
The same guy we talked about at the beginning of this,
podcast. Okay, I didn't remember that.
Right? So, Gary Gensler was teaching crypto at MIT, and Michael Barr was on the board of Ripple. And they ended up being the most anti-crypto people in her administration. And I say that purposefully, her administration, because it's really not the Biden administration. He's not in control of this. She is.
Right. So we need to get Ripple out of the government. I mean, that needs to be centric. And that's how I feel personally, when we're approaching this issue. So I'll pass it back to you, Caitlin. What are your thoughts here?
Well, it's interesting. Ripple has cut both ways, right? The guy who is challenging her, Warren, in Massachusetts, is the guy who got 60,000 individual XRP owners to agree to join forces and intervene in the Ripple lawsuit against the SEC, which means that they all agreed to be sued by the SEC. Okay, what he did was incredible. And he did it independent of Ripple, but I think a lot of Bitcoiners weren't even aware that John Deaton did that. It is incredible. It helped us because obviously the Ripple judgment at the district court level is what unlocked the Bitcoin ETFs, arguably, right? So, I think this cuts both ways. I am not a fan of what Ripple has done in terms of criticizing Bitcoin. They are a big funder of Stand With Crypto, which is trying to get all these anti-crypto people out. So I'm suggesting it's not black and white, but stepping back, it's interesting you didn't know Michael Barr's affiliation with Ripple. It's so interesting because both Barr and Gensler claim to be progressives. And I put out a tweet a couple of days ago about Barr backing off on Basel III Endgame and cutting the bank's requirements in half if he even gets it done. And then Gensler giving special exceptions to several large banks from the anti-crypto SAB 121 accounting rule. We now know the Fed gave supervisory non-objection to Bank of New York while the rest of us startups are waiting. We've been waiting for years. And so again, letting the big banks jump the line. And something else we haven't talked about that came out after Austin Campbell put out a very interesting tweet thread about disparate treatment of crypto versus TradFi in money laundering laws. It prompted me to go back and look at the FTX situation. The FDIC said there were 11 banks that got caught up in the wire fraud. All 11 banks should have had some enforcement action or some sort of regulatory penalty for enabling the FTX wire fraud. And custodial was not one of those. We weren't operating at the time. And like I said, at the time, we were actually turning over evidence of crimes at FTX to the FBI. So we were one of the good guys. But there were 11 banks caught up in this. Okay, so you could tell from the FTX filing who at least 10 of those 11 banks were. So I went back and looked. How many of them got public regulatory actions against them? Guess what? None of the big banks did, and all of the little banks didn't. Of the 10 banks, 4 of them are gone, 2 got public enforcement actions, and all of the systemically important ones look like, at least as of now, they got off without any regulatory authority. So bringing it back to your point, this Warren crowd actually being very corporatist, claiming to be progressives, but actually being very corporatist. That is what their record is. They're defending the too big to fail banks. They are trying to engineer it now that that the only Bitcoin market that is allowed to really exist in the United States, or crypto market that is allowed to really exist in the United States, is the ETF market, because it's inside the too big to fail banks. It's controlled by the Fed and the SEC through their control over the regulated broker dealers and too big to fail banks in New York. And they're still trying, I can confirm this, still trying to kill all of the banks that touch the crypto industry with behind the scenes harassment of the banks. I have publicly disclosed that Custodia has been debanked multiple times, that now we have spent, that the cost to us of operating without a Fed master account is $8 million in counting. We put that in our most recent legal filing. That's just a crushing sum. And that doesn't even include the litigation cost, a crushing sum for a small financial institution. And it's all just lawlessness on the part of these federal bank regulators led by Michael Barr and Marty Gruenberg at the Fed and FDIC respectively.
I can't help but let my bias, you know, come through here and think, how can we not, as an industry, hope for a regime change? Because I know that you're saying that Harris doesn't necessarily continue it, but the blatant passover of the rule of law here is something that is so important. And I want to drive home one more point here. The Warren crowd, the Elizabeth Warren crowd, are corporatists.
Yes.
They favor the banking lobby.
Correct.
This also goes back to one of my main points about who wants to fight Bitcoin, because I've gotten the question, you know, and I'm sure you have, since the day you became a Bitcoiner, well, what if the government stops it? It's the wrong way to think about it. It's the banks that want to stop it, and they use the government as their arm, their action arm, because they own it. So I'm curious, because I know that governments might be drawn to an anti-Bitcoin stance because of some political reason, but it's really banks that are trying to fight it, from my perspective.
Well, so they're becoming the useful idiots for that progressive Warrenite wing. Again, they claim to be progressive, but their actual actions are very corporatist. Once they got into power, they got corrupted and started to favor the big banks and disfavor everyone else. What they're really after, though, Nick, it's obvious. Elizabeth Warren told Chuck Todd on Meet the Press a couple of years ago, she wants a central bank digital currency. That's why I say that the banking industry has made itself useful idiots, because the Fed wants to shut all of this down. And it's interesting, it's public disclosure that every single bank trade association came after Custodia in the Custodia lawsuit, which speaks volumes about what's going on. And there's a brouhaha in Wyoming because the Wyoming Bankers Association joined it. It's actually kind of funny because they came in so late. This is public information that they ended up having to jump through extra hoops at the court to get their amicus brief filed. And it literally cribbed word for word from the American Bankers Association's amicus brief. And the lawyer that they used wasn't from Wyoming. He was from Tennessee. And so I looked him up, and lo and behold, he's a gold partner of the American Bankers Association. So you can kind of see what happens there, right? And I was told behind the scenes from someone who did have a conversation with them that the Fed asked them to file those amicus briefs. So again, that speaks volumes. But let's step back. If that crew does succeed in getting a central bank digital currency, what happens to the banks? This is why the concept of useful idiots starts to arise, because if the banks are actually helping the Fed to kill the crypto industry, because the Fed wants a central bank digital currency, is there going to be a pincer move where this comes right back on them and that they end up losing their monopoly? Because Elizabeth Warren has been very clear. She wants us all to bank at the post office. Same thing with Marty Gruenberg. And, you know, by the way, they're not wrong in some of the reasons why they want that, because they're very opposed to things like overdraft fees. You know, you're getting charged money because you don't have money in your account. You know, some of those things are crazy, and they're not wrong to go after them. The right way, per Dan Moorhead's terrific letter that just came out this week, the right way to address that isn't to lock arms with the big banks to try to kill the crypto industry and then have the Fed turn around and try to kill the banking industry and nationalize it all, which is what I think is happening right now, or at least the attempt. And again, that's why it's so funny that the banks have stepped into all this, because they're next if this crowd does end up succeeding. But it's funny because this is all going to blow back on the banking industry. So it's also, I've learned in the last couple of weeks some really interesting things. Just talking to some of the local bankers, none of them knew, the rank and file members of the Wyoming Bankers Association did not know that the Fed, or did not know that the Wyoming Bankers Association was going to go adverse to the state of Wyoming. The state of Wyoming has filed amicus briefs in support of Custodia. The Wyoming Bankers Association joined with all the national banking lobbyists against Custodia and against the state of Wyoming. And the funny thing is, there's a big fight going on in Wyoming over all this, right? Because the rank and file didn't want that. They actually support us. They what's called ride for the brand in Wyoming. And the funny thing is, one of the bankers, the CEO of a bank whose marketing motto is ride for the brand, is behind all this. She's one of the people who's behind all this. People have been calling me and telling me all of it. And the funny thing is, guess what? The Fed promoted her to a national advisory board in January. So it's kind of funny to look at all this. It's all coming out. It's all out there for the public to see. There's a very interesting relationship with that particular bank as well. The former CEO was on the board of the Kansas City Fed. They have a very interesting executive at that bank. I'll leave it at that. And then the current CEO is on this Fed advisory board, and that former CEO is still a director of the bank. And I testified in legislation back in May, or in front of the Select Committee in Wyoming back in May, that a Wyoming bank CEO did show up in the publicly disclosed documents in discovery in our lawsuit. And it is him. He was on the board of the Kansas City Fed, and he's still on the board of that bank, who is behind the scenes stirring things up and using the Wyoming Bankers Association to help the Fed against the state of Wyoming.
The monopolistic tendencies and oligopolistic tendencies I think here in the banking industry are shining through. And you know, you make an interesting point about how the post office banking model and CBDC will kill off small banks. But guess what? Yeah. The post office will probably be using JPMorgan Chase for its rails, basically enforcing this monopoly in the name of consumer protection, which is, I think, what you're saying. It's corporatists dressed as progressives.
That's exactly right. But again, I am actually passionate about consumer protection as well. Why do you think I was helping law enforcement bring FTX down? Why do you think I was trying to warn the Fed before Silvergate and Signature failed that they were at high risk of bank runs? I'm not interested in having anybody lose any money in any of this. I'm trying to help the opposite. And I'll disclose something I've never disclosed before. In between our district court lawsuit and the appeal, when there was no active litigation, I went straight to the general counsel of the Fed and warned him about a risk issue involving how the crypto industry is connected to TradFi. And I've always been interested in solving those risk problems. I do not want any bank to have a loss. And what ended up happening is both the TradFi and crypto ecosystems hurt each other because they weren't paying attention to how the two were connected together. And I'll bring it back to one of the senior Fed officials who I was recently told said that all crypto users are criminals. If that's what the Fed really thinks, boy, do they have a lot to learn. And it's going to be a shock to that crew when there is a change in the guard, because they have so much catching up to do, if that's what they really think. So it's going to be just a wild next 12 months, regardless of who wins the presidency. But I think we can expect certainly more turnover in the federal regulators if Trump wins but we'll see. It's, you know, I've been told through the grapevine that the American Bankers Association is telling its members that they've been told by the Harris campaign that all the federal bank regulators will be cleaned out. So we'll see. Again, I don't know if that's actually true or not. Harris herself has not said it. I don't know how to rely, whether to rely on all that.
Yeah, I think that it's, instead of trying to determine whether Harris or Trump is the right candidate going forward, our job here is to expose what we know. And so, and we'll let people make their own decisions. So I'm going to say a mid-episode thank you, Caitlin, because you know, you asked me, or you mentioned that I didn't know Michael Barr's connection to Ripple. It's because you know me. You know I'm a markets guy, and I'm looking at prices. And and when I look at Bitcoin's market cap above $1 trillion and a 6 to 7 month consolidation, the price on the chart tells me things are going okay for Bitcoin, nothing materially dangerous. Consolidation is the indecision, and it's just a matter of time before adoption and the buyers catch up with where the price is today and sends it up. So unless we have some major crash, I'm not trying to go in between where you are and where Nick Carter is, you know, looking at these things, especially in the past from a regulatory standpoint. So that's
Nick.
Yeah, please.
Just related to that, I've only given, like I said, about half of what I know. I'm still sitting on a lot that I've never talked about publicly. It's just crazy what has happened here. And people in DC who need to know do know the whole story. And I've made sure that the real story is in the hands of the people who really do need to know, because there has to be some cleaning up of all this. Otherwise, this apparatus, which has been abused, it was abused during Operation Chokepoint 1.0. It got abused again against different industries, including crypto and fintech, in Operation Chokepoint 2.0. It will be abused in the future. And I'm not making a political statement here. It was the left who abused it the first time. But I absolutely am concerned that if the right gets a hold of that apparatus that obviously has overreached and decides, let's stop banking Planned Parenthood, for example, that absolutely could be abused against disfavored interests by the right against the left as well. I'm with Austin Campbell saying this is all just wrong. And with Nick Carter ultimately saying this is just moral. There needs to be honor in bank regulation again. There needs to be a complete justice is blind. We're not using this apparatus against political enemies, full stop.
And that's what is the main point here, that we couldn't agree more. This is about justice. Politics is involved, clearly, but the main point is justice.
Yes.
And when people go to vote, maybe they are voting for what they believe will be a more just administration or regulatory, but what we're all seeking is that justice. Yeah. We've done an amazing episode recently, Caitlin, with a Philip Hamburger of the New Civil Liberties Alliance. Mm-hmm. On Chevron deference being overturned and what that might do to impact regulatory agencies. We didn't really do so with regard to the crypto industry, but Philip mentioned Operation Chokepoint 1.0 and guided us as to how regulatory agencies are using basically this arbitrary and capricious methods that you mentioned to regulate in the way that they want, and doing so by going after banking relationships with the industry itself.
Yeah, well, and like I said, I now know that Michael Barr and the Board of Governors staff moved against at least four banks that were banking the crypto industry in mid-November 2022, and Custodia got caught up in that, and that there were arbitrary and capricious rules just magically applied to them. Like, you got to take your deposit concentration down from 99% in the case of Silvergate to 15 in a short period of time. Just made it up, right? And there's a reason why the Administrative Procedure Act is there, to protect companies against arbitrary and capricious moves from the regulators, against the regulated. But when they just don't even bother to put something like that out, in public. It's still not published. There's a reporter, a really intrepid reporter, trying to confirm the 15% number. It's out there, but nobody's willing to go on the record to confirm it because the Fed hasn't published it, but and the FDIC hasn't published it, but it's what's called confidential supervisory information. So those who have heard it directly won't confirm it on the record because it's criminal for confidential supervisory information to be made public. So now, per Tyler Winklevoss, he did a great description of how this works. The federal bank regulators, instead of being honorable and instead of putting that proposed 15% diversification requirement against this industry out there for public comment, or even putting it in what's called the FFIEC handbook, they just call up the bank CEO and say, hey, per Tyler Winklevoss's words, you got a nice looking bank there. It sure would be too bad if we shut it down, if you didn't comply with what we're about to tell you. And so you can see how this gets abused because they can hide behind confidential supervisory information. That whole system has to change. Now, one of the things we ended up talking pretty deeply here about the regulatory corruption. What does this matter for Bitcoin? Here's what I think's interesting, and maybe picking up on your point about where we stand sort of mid-cycle here, is that there's a split now between the number go up crowd who loves that Wall Street is coming for our Bitcoin and thinks that it's all about the ETF. And then the rest of us who've been around a long time, who are not new, and who are more interested in the tech as a payment system and as freedom money, as a decentralization of power to literally deconcentrate power over the financial system, which we have seen it has been very centralized and very abused here, in part to help big business. One of the favorite guiding points that I have had in my career is something that a friend, Terry Kibbe, once told me, that the left fears big business, the right fears big government. Freedom-loving people fear what happens when big business and big government collude. And that is what's happening here to try to stop Bitcoin. Okay, so beware. I've always said the ETF, as you know, I've talked about this on past podcasts. I've always said the ETF is a double-edged sword. Bank of New York getting into Bitcoin custody is a double-edged sword, right? Because this is Wall Street coming in to play Wall Street games, but they are so much closer to the bank regulators than the smaller banks who are more innovative, who are state regulated. And and by the way, those big banks are systemically important. I think one of the interesting things about learning that the Fed giving Silvergate that Sophie's choice of diversify immediately or throw in the towel, and then the next day the systemic run began, that tells you how fragile the system was to begin with. If a small bank like that can touch off a bigger bank run. Okay, so be careful. I'm not interested in either system hurting the other, but beware that the more Wall Street gets control over the secondary markets in Bitcoin, the more fragile all this becomes. And we've done so much as a community to bootstrap an anti-fragile network here. And it is anti-fragile because it's so global. I'll go back to something I heard Andreas Antonopoulos say on a podcast probably 7 or 8 years ago now, that if Wall Street comes in and does try to control Bitcoin, try to get, a majority of the hash rate, try to bend Bitcoin to its whims, the rest of us will just fork it and they can have their corpo coin. And the rest of us who are truly in control of the Bitcoin network will prevail. And he's absolutely right. And that's my North Star. Nobody cares. Bitcoin itself doesn't care, about Wall Street coming in. It's the secondary market where all those games are going to be played, and not the primary market, and certainly not the Bitcoin blockchain itself. That is immune to all of these attempts to centralize it and control it. But just beware, there's a real split. And I think that's going to be the next 4 years of Bitcoin in the next epoch. Is the real split between the number go up crowd that's just here for the trade and those of us that are very interested in true mass adoption. And ETF is not mass adoption. I disagree with people who think it is.
And I'll play devil's advocate here on the secondary market side and just say that my low IQ devil's advocate take here is that because Bitcoin is a global market with no one price, it's a global arbitrage. And if you can pull the coins out and hand the paper money over or the fiat wire over and secure that those number of sats for whatever the fiat price that you paid, you yourself have established that price.
Yep.
And if you can figure out how to arbitrage over over jurisdictions and all that, right, then everyone's getting the market price that they deserve
yeah,
and that the market is telling us that that is the price. And then over the long term, maybe, you know, the information asymmetry is what leads to the gains. But we hear you loud and clear about the double-edged sword. It's a good segue into SAB 121 and Bank of New York, because you've mentioned it probably six times. I've circled it on my notes here four times.
Yeah.
So it's time to ask you about it.
Yeah.
We have an exception granted to Bank of New York to custody Bitcoin, the largest custodian and someone that anybody that's been in the financial industry has faced, you know, Mellon being the custodian for a lot of the accounts that I used to trade.
Sure.
What are your thoughts here? Obviously, it's an exception. It
mm-hmm. yep.
directly impacts you because it is something custodia has been seeking.
Yes.
So how are you thinking about this, Caitlin?
Oh, the hypocrisy. Oh, the double standards. Here's from a risk perspective, something I'm concerned about. This corporatist approach of these federal bank regulators of favoring the big banks and skewering the small ones is going to come back to bite them. Because look at the hedge funds that set up crypto trading units. I'm thinking of DRW, I'm thinking of Jane Street, I'm thinking of Stone Ridge. They set up segregated entities for their crypto business. Why? Because crypto is a bearer instrument, and you don't want a hack that causes the theft of crypto assets to spread to the other entity. So they kept their TradFi and crypto entities segregated, legally segregated. That is absolutely the right thing to do if you are leveraged. Custodia is not leveraged. This is the reason why not being leveraged is the most important thing in connecting TradFi to crypto. But Bank of New York Mellon has put this into its too big to fail bank. Now, let's step back. One of the things you and I talked about when I was last on was some of these hidden risks relating to what if there is a hack of the ETF? What would happen to that ETF? Holy cow, if that happened, the ETF price would diverge from the underlying massively. And also all these Wall Street games, rehypothecation, all the sort of, commingling of collateral and things that can cause more paper claims to the ETF than ETF units outstanding. That is standard in Wall Street. Notice I didn't say paper claims to Bitcoin, because the SEC did do something very right here, which is that the ETFs are not allowed to rehypothecate their underlying collateral. So we do know that the underlying ETF collateral is one for one against the ETF units, but the ETF units themselves can then be taken and leveraged, and all these leverage games get played. So this is really important because who's doing all these leverage games? It's the systemically important banks. The world is upside down, folks. The last thing that, from a financial system risk perspective, should be done is concentrating these risks in the too big to fail banks and commingling them with the too big to fail banks. Holy cow. It's the opposite of what should be done from a risk perspective. And I'll go back and salute Austin Campbell again, because one of his great tweet threads about the Silvergate thing was that this whole 15% requirement, this unwritten rule that is actually a rule behind closed doors, that the banks have to diversify to no more than 15% of their exposure being in crypto. He calls that evidence that the federal bank regulators don't understand risk. And I agree with him. because the last thing you should do is put this inside systemically important banks. It is different. It is risky in certain respects. And if there ever is a failure of one of these protocols, or if there ever is a hack of the ETF custodian, it's going to spread into TradFi, and that's not good. And we don't even, that's an easy risk to identify. I'm talking that you and I know about some of the more subtle risks that happen in trading markets where you get commingling of collateral, where there's a requirement, for example, in the ETFs to go through cash, and because it's cash create in the ETFs, you can't create an ETF unit by just purchasing the Bitcoin itself. The reason the SEC did that is the SEC did not want these too big to fail banks to hold Bitcoin on their balance sheet. Well, what did they do? They ended up creating a whack-a-mole situation where now there's all this risk to unsettled trades because Fedwire is only open certain hours of the day and Bitcoin trades 24/7. So what happens if you have a lot of volume when Fedwire is not open? You have all these unsettled trades. This is an entirely different risk that is also a big risk. That's the very risk that I identified to the general counsel of the Fed when I emailed him directly in between while we had no active litigation, just telling him this is big, and it's in the G-SIBs, the systemically important banks, the global systemically important banks, and you don't want this risk there. So let's see if there's a problem. But I am worried about problems like that. And trying to just use, to Austin's point, 1970s diversification approaches to a 2020s problem, to him, was evidence that the bank regulators don't understand risk, which is the scariest thought.
When you talk about the risk there of commingling, one of the first things that comes to my mind is how in traditional banking, the whole activity of traditional banking is a maturity transformation exercise in which your liabilities, the money yeah. that you owe out is short term, the assets that you own are longer term, but they're self-liquidating, to go all the way back to Walter Correct. Badgett. And yes. that's how banks work. That's how money markets work. But Bitcoin isn't a self-liquidating asset, and it's actually the furthest from it, making any commingling actually break the banking model.
Correct.
Because you have a physically yes. different asset from the other assets that are able to be transformed, and the actual transformation is this liability asset management. That's a little bit thick for today's episode, honestly. But I just wanted to mention that because I've never thought of it like that. That Bitcoin commingling with TradFi challenges the maturity transformation
yes.
fundamentals of banking itself.
It absolutely does. And again, you should probably have Austin Campbell on. He speaks so well of this. He was at JP Morgan. He was a fixed income trader, just like you. And so he comes from that markets background. And then he ran he set up the reserve policy and risk management for PayPal's US dollar when he was at Paxos. And he's now teaching at Columbia and NYU and consulting. But because he's got that background, he speaks so well. He and I align a lot on these questions about, I mean, man, if the federal regulators really want to learn about this and want to take their head out of the sand and realize that not all crypto users are criminals. And again, the person who said that at the Fed is pretty senior. Holy moly, they've got a lot to learn. And it's going to come as a shock to them that that there is something very real here, and they should start talking and listening. More importantly, listening to the actual users of this technology who are trying to solve the Rube Goldberg back office spaghetti in the U.S. dollar system, and that's what Austin is so focused on is U.S. dollar stablecoins. And that's very real. You know, what's also really interesting, Nick, is because the U.S., because of this war in crowd, especially in the last couple of years, just trying to kill the private crypto intermediaries, is all of it, all of the activity has gone offshore. This is fascinating that the Hong Kong banks are offering US dollar clearing, and that does not go through the Fed. It's because there's such US dollar pools of reserves in Asia that can be accessed to create a viable business. It's what you and I would recognize that as a euro dollar market. That's a misnomer, but it's an offshore dollar market is what that means. Leave the euro point out of it. I don't know why that word evolved, because it's very confusing as a word. But euro dollar means offshore dollar, and there's a big offshore US dollar settlement market that's happening where coming out of Hong Kong, there's actual clearing and settlement of US dollars that doesn't touch the Fed. And this is supporting stable coins. So I don't understand where the policy people at the Fed are coming from in trying to kill all this activity on the onshore in the United States, because what they've done is create a vacuum into which the criminals like Sam Bankman-Fried can walk. And they're creating and enabling offshore US dollar competitors to the Fed itself.
Wow. And the a lot of things to respond there. First of all, the offshore settlement of US dollar transactions in Hong Kong, which is a euro dollar phenomenon, the reason that we call it euro stems back to the original settlement of dollar balances in European banks via cable wires. And part of the original banking, offshore dollar banking contingent was a French bank, a commercial bank of Northern Europe. In French, it's BSEN, and their cable address was Eurobank. Oh, and so dollars for BSEN were considered euro dollars. And so, and yes, it's Europe, because the E in BSEN is Europe, right? And so, but it's actually not named after the continent. It's named after a French bank.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
And their cable address, a special thing that I learned from my research that I'm doing for my second book, which will be out soon, Caitlin. I'm excited to send it to you.
Oh, thanks. I didn't know you were working on a second book.
Yes.
Congrats.
Yes. And it has a whole tale of BSEN. And I should also mention here that Josh Younger at the New York Fed, formerly at JP Morgan, was a counterparty of mine when I was trading bonds. And he's a rocket scientist that turned Brait's derivatives that he now does research for the Fed. He went on Wiesenthal's show a year or two ago and told this BSEN story. And I immediately went into my academic journal libraries online and searched and found, the records. And anyway,
I can't wait to read that history, because Layered Money was such a good book. I recommend it to people all the time. So I'm very interested in seeing your second book and reading that history. I did not know that, but that's how it got the confusing term. It wasn't so confusing when it was just to BSEN, I guess, but it is confusing when you're thinking about Hong Kong or Latin America or Africa or MENA.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So, and so what you're talking about with offshore settlement of US dollars, what Caitlin is talking about is the hypocrisy of attacking any of this activity in the US when there's Caitlin says it politely, when she says that their head is in the sand, their head is somewhere else. Trust me. And it's because they can't understand that the global dollar system at this point in time has nothing to do with the United States.
Yes.
It just doesn't. And that's a cold fact. We're going to try to get Austin Campbell on per your recommendation. We'd love to even do an episode with you and Senator Lummis, where we talk about some of the relationships with Wyoming, the federal government, and these banking, maybe after a change in administration, maybe not. We'll see what happens there. Caitlin, is there anything else you want to mention? Thank you. You've been very generous with your time, and we really appreciate you coming, fired up today, because, man, there's so much injustice, and nothing gets the belly fired up like injustice, I know.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, but I'm kind of immune to it because I've known most of this for, since January 2023. So we're coming up, on 2 years of this. We're coming up on the second anniversary of FTX failing on November 11th. And for me now, just at this point, to be learning even more about what the Fed did, I mean, history is not going to be kind to everything that happened here, including the triggering of a banking crisis that reveals just how brittle the underlying financial system is by taking down a small bank into the jitters of the market at that point in time. Holy moly. And again, I just think this Bahrain as head of supervision and regulation at the Fed, with all the things that I pointed out earlier, the Basel III endgame issue, the granting Bank of New York Mellon the special exception, working with the SEC on that special exception from SAB 121, and the supervisory non-exception, non-accept, non-objection for them to get into custody. And then the clear pattern of not publicly going after the big banks because of their involvement with FTX, but going after every one of the small banks, including killing off four of them. Holy cow. It's the record is really clear. And what's fascinating is that people have told me the vast majority of FTX's wires went through the big banks, which you and I would know makes sense because Sam had such an international business. And if you look at the list of banks, I mean, there are two Japanese G-SIBs on there. I mean, it's the, Turkish banks. It's just banks from all over the world. And the small banks don't really do that much international wire business. It's the big banks that do. So the hypocrisy of not going after the big banks, but killing off the small ones. I mean, the record could not be clearer that this crew is trying to kill the crypto industry. And those of us who make it to the other side of this administration, man, when the world opens up, we're going to be in a pole position. But I feel for the people who were unlawfully targeted and probably unlawfully had their property taken without due process. Yes, there were issues at many of those banks. I'm not questioning that. But to have the big banks get away with them and the small banks have it be fatal, this is just wrong.
Biden administration making a grand deal with Senator Elizabeth Warren, Michael Barr at the Fed, Bharat Ramaphurthy at the Biden administration, all fighting this industry. The record shows it. Caitlin Long, thank you so much for joining us today. We hope people will vote accordingly, whatever that means for them, but using this information as hopefully in to inform their decision on what has occurred in this current administration, and maybe that will increase their desire to voice what they want from the next administration. Caitlin of Custodia, thank you so much for joining us once again.
Thanks so much, Nick. Always good to see you. Can't wait for your book to come out.
Appreciate you. With Caitlin Long, I'm Nick
Likewise.
Bhatia. We'll catch you guys next time.